it started in here.
I am extending an open hand to work with members of both parties, Democrats and Republicans, to protect our citizens of every background, color, religion, and creed, and the sacred duty of every elected official in this chamber is to defend Americans, to protect their safety, their families, their communities, and their right to the American dream. Because Americans are dreamers too.
News Talk AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. I am Drew. That man over there, every little thing he does is magic, is John Justice.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
And in there, Sam.
I'm like a wizard.
Hey, Sam.
What am I? Chopped liver?
Well, I can't really. It'd be inappropriate to say the next line of the song. So I opted not to.
You didn't really think that through there, did you?
I realized halfway through that this was going down an unfortunate path.
What song is this?
It's by The Police.
Every little thing she does
is magic. Yeah, you should Google those lyrics.
I don't know if I want to.
So that you know what the next line is that Drew did not want to equate to you. And even if he had started with you, it still would have been wrong.
It still would have been.
Yeah, still it would have been just, yeah. Boy, what a way to kick things off there, Drew.
What an awkward start.
We'll blame the inhalation of salt from the drive-in.
There was a lot
this
of it.
Morning.
Or the inhalation of salt from Democrats after that statement.
Oh, nicely done. Hey. Wow.
Sick burn, Sam.
Salty, salty tears. Salty tears of Nancy Pelosi and Louis Gutierrez. That was a good speech last night, man. He didn't do debate.
No.
He didn't do debate Trump, but he did good conservative presidential Trump.
It was good. It was definitely one of the high points of the Trump presidency so far. I think he did a really good job. It was very well crafted. And it was well crafted in such a way that it was very political. I mean, it was overtly political at times, in that it put Democrats in a really tough spot because they absolutely did not want to give him applause. They absolutely did not want to give him any stand up and applause moments, but he would say things that are kind of common sense things that I think most Americans would agree with, and the Democrats would just be sitting on their hands,
just looking all
scowling,
crabby.
So dumb.
Looking all salty.
So dumb.
He was touting the record low unemployment numbers for African Americans.
Right.
And the camera panned to the crowd, went to the audience, and you saw Democrats and black Democrats just scowling.
Yeah.
Just looking angry.
Now, that is really funny to me because, and I'll let you, because you're the one that you brought it up when you came in this morning, one of the narratives that has emerged, that narrative that you were speaking of before the show, which I'll let you comment on, flies in the face of the reaction of the individuals in the audience last night over the African American unemployment numbers.
Yeah, the narrative now that I've seen, I saw it about five or six times last night. The narrative is that the record low African American unemployment numbers are thanks to Obama.
Well, they should have they should have been applauding.
Right? They're like, Obama.
Yeah, they should have been. Yeah.
To which my reaction was, why did President Obama set policies in place to decrease African American unemployment after he left office?
That's a good point.
He was in office for 8 years.
Right.
Like he could have done something. He just had this like ticking time bomb that he just was waiting
on.
When I leave, you guys. This is good. About a year after I leave office, guys are going to be really happy.
Guys,
I'm going to set this up for the next president.
That's exactly it, Sam. You're missing the big picture. Obama also thought Hillary was going to win, and this would have been a gift to her.
Ah.
Good guy Obama over here.
Yeah. And by the way, if Hillary was in office and this had happened, it wouldn't have happened if Hillary was in office. But if Hillary was in office and this had happened, people would still be saying it was because of Obama. They wouldn't have given her credit either.
You think so?
I really do. I think there'd be a portion of the Democrats that would be touting Hillary, but at the same time, there'd be others going, yeah, and boy, Obama really set that up nicely for her. But yeah, it was just a tee up, you know?
Yeah, thanks, Obama.
Suppress them so that for 8 years, so that in the ninth year, everybody could reap the benefits. Maybe securing his legacy.
We got a jam-packed show today. We're going to obviously take your reaction to the State of the Union last night, 651-989-5855, throughout the morning. From Heartland Institute, we're going to talk to Tim Huelskamp at about 7:20.
Looking forward to that.
David Gartenstein-Ross, really looking forward to that conversation around 7:35 this morning.
Talk FISA, and then we'll talk a bit about FISA and Russia and FISA.
We'll let him put on his pundit hat for the State of the Union. And what I want to we've been talking a lot about the constitutionality of FISA, of the FISA courts. What I'm interested in learning from David, because he'll have a unique perspective on this, is the effectiveness. Like, is this actually an effective tool?
Sure.
You know, and we can debate the constitutionality, and we should, and we will, and we have been, but has it actually been effective?
Plus, we'll be talking with, potentially, we've got him kind of on deck if we need him, James T. Harris, the talk show host, viral talk superstar on Facebook. Also, Andrew Lang, our D.C. correspondent. They're both sort of on deck, depending on how things go for the 8 o'clock hour, to get some of their thoughts. Sam has been scouring the internet, so coming up, it'll be the top five things other than the State of the Union, because there's a lot of other things that we'll get to, and of course, throughout the show this morning, we want to hear from you. We want you to call in 651-989-5855 and certainly use that hashtag TCNT on Twitter. We want your thoughts throughout the show of what you thought about the State of the Union. We'll have audio and a recap throughout the morning.
But first, the top five things you need to know to kick off your Wednesday coming up next.
Justice and Drew. Along with Sam, top five coming up here in just a moment here on Twin Cities News Talk. You know, Drew, it was funny, State of the Union last night. So I've got like a little routine that I do now. You watch it, but don't. I didn't do any. Last night I decided not to do any Twitter. I wanted to soak it in just to not be tainted, right, by any reaction. Right, that's why I wanted my own personal feelings and vibes. Right, so I wrote down like my notes. I was like, "Wow, I positive, right? Presidential." I said factual.
You did your own sort of little instant reaction.
Poll. Exactly. Non-combative. Oh. Right. Mm-hmm. At times, emotional. Right. Conservative. These were some of my takes. So then, after I was done, then I went to go look at what some of the responses were, and is doom and gloom. It was butt kissing. I heard that.
Yeah.
Offensive. Slobbering.
What could have been? I wonder what was offensive.
Fractured. Smearing. The biggest one was it didn't unify. Yeah, because Obama's State of the Unions were always, you know, always had a bit of conservatism to them.
The people that were hoping for some unifying remarks, what were they hoping for? That all these rabid anti-Trumpers were suddenly going to watch the State of the Union and go, oh, you know what? That guy's not so bad. Yeah, I kind of like him now.
Right.
Yeah, I wish I would have voted for him.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm glad he won.
You know what I mean?
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Like that call we got late in the show yesterday about, you know, wanting everybody to stop mocking each other and everybody can just work together. So that's never happened. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
It's politics. You have people with agendas. You have people with various varying degrees of differences in opinion, and they're not going to just suddenly decide, hey, we're all one big happy party.
And we'll be working through all of this throughout the show.
Would be terrible if they did.
Pete Hegseth mentioned yesterday that he was concerned that that the speech wasn't going to go the way that it went. And it was interesting too, because I heard some commentary of one of the news outlets, and I think it was like Brit Hume. He was saying that the indication that they thought they were getting was that this was going to be a unifying speech. Well, the indication we got from the White House was that it was supposed to be reaching across the aisle. Well, it's like, well, you know what? That was probably fake news. Who started that? Who was the first person to say he's going to be extending an olive branch to Democrats?
He did, though. I mean, at times when he talked about immigration, he said, I'm ready to work with you. I'm ready to put a plan together. The number of people who are now going to morph into citizens has, like, doubled. So I don't know where that came from.
But right.
It went from, like, 800,000 to 1.8 million. So that's cool.
Well, it's a plus one program.
Oh, okay.
You get amnesty plus one.
Right. Who's your plus one?
It's like, but it's bar rules, right? When you go out dancing, me plus one on the guest list.
So there were moments that I think, you know, conservatives can look at and not be terribly thrilled with this. I'll be interested to learn the details of his what's now a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan.
A lot of flying cars.
That's cool.
Everybody gets a flying car.
That's a lot of money that is hopefully going to just be sort of granted out to states.
Yeah.
And let states make the decisions, but I doubt it.
I hope that's a trio balloon number. And we're going to pull that back by like a lot.
Yeah, because that's how the government works. They float a trio balloon number and it goes down.
I'm just trying to be optimistic.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. It is that time of the day. However, when Sam delivers us the top five stories that you need to know to kick off your Wednesday.
Number one.
A court error unmasked a new person of interest in the Las Vegas massacre. From the Associated Press, a court error publicly revealed the name of a man identified as a person of interest in the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history. Clark County District Court Judge Alyssa Kaddish acknowledged that a member for court staff failed to black out the man's name on one of the 276 pages of documents.
Whoops.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pages in there. You can't imagine. You can't be required to catch them all.
Well, she missed one, and it was released to news organizations, including the Associated Press and the Las Vegas Review-Journal, whose eagle eyes caught on to it really quick. After the error was recognized, the lawyers for the news organizations were told to return the documents. The attorney representing the Associated Press and other media did so, but the other lawyer had already transmitted the documents, and the Review Journal published Douglas Haig's name online. Kaddish later ordered the document not to be published without redactions, but she acknowledged she couldn't order the newspaper to retract the name. Kaddish said, "The reality is, now that it's online, there's really nothing I can do."
Yeah, that's how online works.
Yeah. The unsealed search warrants in the investigation of the October 1st shooting that killed 58 people revealed Haig as a person of interest authorities spoke to after the shooting. Haig told a reporter that he sold ammo to Paddock and that he had been contacted earlier by investigators in the case.
"You know, he's confirmed that you are the person who was mentioned in the court records and
I am Doug Haig. Yes.
You were contacted by the officials investigating?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm the guy that sold ammunition to Stephen Paddock."
"You did sell it to him?"
"Yes. Yeah, you'll see all that tomorrow morning."
"Do you know him?"
"No, not at all."
"You never met him in person?"
Yes, once.
So, was he here?
"We talked to you Friday. Be glad to answer all your questions there."
He's referring to the fact that a sign on his front door said that he will hold a news conference on Friday. According to the Las Vegas Review-Journal, a LinkedIn account for Haig says that he works as a senior engineer for Honeywell Aerospace, an aircraft engines and avionics manufacturer in Phoenix, as well as for a company called Specialized Military Ammunition that claims to be the source for premium MILSPEC tracer and incendiary ammunition in popular military calibers. That's according to their company website, and the website also indicates that the ammunition business has been shuttered.
Yeah, it's not surprising that this individual is a person of interest. What I found of most interest was I went and looked at a quick look at Las Vegas news websites to kind of see what the gauge was locally. This is obviously it kind of goes without saying, but you don't get that perspective not being there. It's still a really, really big issue locally, and it's a lot of frustration in the local media there with the lack of having, you know, any type of still clear understanding of what is going on, and a lot of frustration around the police department. So they're in Nevada, it's still a huge story. Still shocked that we don't have a motive on this. It really is still unbelievable.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't think we ever will at this point.
Yeah.
Number two.
The man arrested in a hotel standoff near the University of Minnesota was apparently grieving for his daughter and upset about his cat.
Oh.
Yeah. From the Star Tribune, a two-day standoff at a hotel near the University of Minnesota ended yesterday afternoon when police arrested the man who had holed up in a sixth-floor room while grieving for his daughter and sending angry messages alleging someone had stolen his exotic cat. Officers apprehended the man shortly before 1:45 p.m. Earlier in the day, alarms were heard going off at about noon after a SWAT team fired gas into the suspect's room and the police moved in. Two people who know the man told the Star Tribune that he is Rashad Bowman. He's 43 years old and he has recently lived in Woodbury and has theft and drug convictions on his record. At a news conference an hour after the standoff ended, the University of Minnesota Police Chief Matt Clark said the standoff began when police were called to the hotel on a welfare check on the suspect, whom he declined to identify at that time. For the first 24 hours, they were concerned about a woman in the room with him, and that was based on reports from family that he may be armed as well as his own threats. When the woman was released at midnight on Monday, he still refused to surrender, but negotiations continued until about 8 a.m. when he began lighting fires in the room and saying he was going to torch or burn down the hotel.
Whoa.
He continued to do that and threatened officers by saying that he had a firearm and was ready to use it. Clark said that negotiations persisted as gas munitions and flashbangs were fired.
That's an odd way to negotiate.
It is.
That's what they call aggressive negotiations.
I can breathe those into my next contract talks.
That's aggressive negotiations right there.
Officers entered the room when this man climbed out the window. Clark said officers were very concerned when he was outside the window that he would fall or become seriously injured or die, so they backed off to get him to come back inside. The man eventually surrendered at 1:43 p.m. yesterday, 38 hours after the standoff began. Reached on his cell phone by the Star Tribune about 20 minutes before his arrest, Bowman said, "I can't talk right now."
Kind of busy, guys.
He answered.
That was kind of a boss move by the Star Tribune, though.
I know.
Just call him.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Hat tip to the Tribune on that
big,
one.
Big hat tip to the Star Tribune. Wow. When I saw that line, I cracked up. I can't talk right now, guys.
Kinda.
I'm a little busy.
Very tired.
Let me buzz you back in 10.
Very tired. Very busy.
Can we just text?
That's fine.
The Star Tribune is probably like, well, you can text me. That's fine.
Well, I'm glad it ended with no apparent injuries.
Yeah.
The woman that was being held hostage was uninjured when she was released. It sounds like they managed to subdue this man without any injury or anything, and no officers were harmed. So that's all good. It's an odd story. I'm sure we're going to end up learning more about what the circumstances were that led to this guy deciding that he was going to hole himself up in a hotel room and hold a woman hostage.
If they find his cat, I wonder if they'll let him have it in prison.
Yeah, I hope his cat's okay.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I hope his cat's all right. We will continue with Sam's Top 5 coming up right after this.
Justice.
Justice and Drew. Sam, too. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Time permitting. There is a story out of Fox News, completely non-State of the Union related, but it is related to a lengthy conversation that we had. A woman was denied an emotional support peacock on a United flight. We had the story about how Delta was changing its standards for what was qualifying as a therapy or an emotional companion pet. Yeah. And United kept a emotional support peacock from getting on a flight. That's a bit... A peacock? I mean, yeah. A duck is one thing.
Apparently, this
is... Is huge.
A duck is absolutely appropriate. Peacocks, no. That is inappropriate. You cannot fit a peacock in a box.
Well,
I mean, if you can put a duck in a box.
I mean, female peacocks they don't have the big tails. You could fit them.
Oh, the female peacocks don't have the big tail?
God, I hope I'm not wrong about that since I just said it on the radio. No,
that would make sense. I mean, when you think of like I hope not. The mallard.
Suddenly, I'm not confident in what I just said.
No, they do not. They kind of look like turkeys.
The mallard ducks are the male ducks, right?
I don't know.
No, mallard is a breed.
Breed.
It's a type of duck.
It's a type of
duck. But aren't the more vibrant colored ducks the male ducks to attract the female ducks? Okay,
yes.
So that would make sense on the peacock tip.
All ducks were white.
What?
I don't know.
The female peacocks. So like mallard females, right. Female peacocks are brownish.
We need to start up an animal podcast.
We should, you know what, clearly.
We know so much.
What we should do is start an animal podcast and talk specifically about animals that we have no idea, like don't know anything about.
I have a better idea. We could get back to Sam's.
On today's episode, lemurs.
Top five. Lemurs. Dude, lemurs are awesome. I like lemurs. They're cool.
They're the ones with the long tail?
Yeah.
By the tail?
Yeah, they jump from like tree to tree. Yeah,
well, that's like all monkeys, though. All monkeys do that.
Well, not... Okay.
See, this is perfect. We're already ready for our first episode, talking about things we don't understand about lemurs.
Well, let's end this nonsense and get right back into Sam's top five.
Number three.
Speaking of birds, no, there are no superb owl ads on MSP airport trams.
This is a funny story because this completely blew up and went viral. But it was apparently it was just a joke, like somebody had made.
I heard other programs discussing this that didn't know that it was fake. From Care 11, the fake image has gotten a signal boost from national sports media outlets and even the Minnesota Vikings executive vice president of football operations. The photo seems to show a Super Bowl ad coincidentally placed between two tram cars to read "Superb Owl."
Yeah, it's light rail. It's like these two trams or light rail things, but it's one long train in reality, and it says, you know, Super Bowl LII.
Right.
But then somebody photoshopped it to make it look like it's two separate ones and photoshopped it perfectly to make it seem Superb Al LII.
Yeah, if you want to take a look at it, you can go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page. We put a picture of it up there. We had a friend of ours who's coming to town wanting to know what our plans were this week, and they labeled their email Superb Owl, and I just thought it was funny because I was like, oh, that's an interesting way of being able to use Super Bowl.
Right.
Without, like, because you can't do party themes, so it's like if you were a bar or a restaurant and you did a Superb Owl party, would you get busted by the NFL?
I didn't know that you could
do party. Because you can't use Super Bowl. You can't use the Super Bowl title.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they have the license on that.
So everybody dresses up as an owl. Perfect. I love it. The photo was altered in Photoshop. CBS Sports has since updated their story to reflect that error. The joke started in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Aviation Spotting Group on Facebook, a closed group that boasts over 3,800 members. John Newsom shared the original photo with the group Sunday afternoon. A commenter asked for a photoshopped version of the image to show Superb Owl, a running gag during the winter months, apparently, when airports make for popular gathering spots for the influx of snowy owls in the area. Enter David Riviera, a webmaster for nonprofits and graduate student at the University of Minnesota. Riviera photoshopped the bee onto the first tram car. His Photoshop file has at least 11 layers. Riviera also provided proof of Newsom's raw camera file.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny. And it's always funny when something like that goes right. Even if it's Photoshopped, if it makes you laugh, then good. You know, I mean, it's not like they're trying to trick people.
Right.
You know, just a little joke. I posted what I thought was a funny picture on social media a few days ago, and sure enough, there were people saying, I'm pretty sure that's Photoshop. I don't care. It made me laugh.
Does that make it any less funny?
I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah, it was like, those bad parts.
It was so stupid. I was pretty sure somebody Photoshopped that. I was like, yeah, you okay. Know, yeah, shut up with your fake news.
Still funny.
Yeah, it is still funny.
Number four.
From the FCC, or according to the FCC, the officer who issued that mistaken Hawaii missile alert thought the emergency was real. From Care 11, miscommunication between a Hawaii Emergency Management Agency supervisor and an agency employee led to the transmission of a false alert of an incoming missile earlier this month that put the state's residents on edge for nearly 40 minutes. Yeah, that is
terrified them.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's according to preliminary findings issued yesterday by the Federal Communications Commission. Hawaiians received a false emergency alert notification warning of a ballistic missile threat shortly after 8 a.m. on January 13th. The alert specifically warned of an inbound missile, urging them to seek immediate shelter and underscored that this is not a drill. The state agency conducted a drill earlier that morning that went off without a hitch, but then the night supervisor decided to run another drill without warning during a shift change. The FCC said the Hawaii agency has already taken steps to try to avoid the mistake being repeated. as they should. The agency is now requiring more supervision of drills and alert and test alert transmissions. It has also created a correction template for false alerts and has put a pause on drills until its own investigation is completed.
Well, you know, when you've got the human element involved...
Mistakes happen, man.
Yeah, I mean, even when you don't have the human element involved. So if it hadn't been for this happening, they wouldn't have these protocols put in. And it's unfortunate that it did, but the takeaway is they've taken steps to correct the problem now. And I hope that the people in Hawaii trust the new system to the point where if it ever does go off again, they take it seriously and they go like, oh, it's just them screwing up again.
And I can't imagine if they get another alert like this, and I mean, God forbid it's actually a real alert, there's got to be a part of every citizen who's going to be like, oh, well, is this real?
I guess the more appropriate comment is, let's just pray that there never is a need for them to have to issue the alert in the first place. Yes. I guess you should probably start there before I go to the concern of whether or not they take the alert seriously if it is real. Just kind of specify.
I think the more time passes, the less people will react, you know, thinking it's the boy who cried wolf again. So, but yeah, right. The let's hope it just never happens.
Number five.
From the Star Tribune, Shutterfly is going to buy the Eden Prairie-based Life Touch in an $825 million deal.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Cha-ching.
California-based Shutterfly,
Thanks, Obama.
I guess.
I don't know.
Thanks, Trump. The big online retailer and manufacturer of personalized photography and related products and services plans to pay $825 million in cash to buy Eden Prairie-based Life Touch, an employee-owned company and a leader in school photography. The Shutterfly CEO, Chris North, he said, "We're focused on growing both these businesses. We're just now bringing the two teams together. We're going to bring Shutterfly products to Life Touch as well as our cloud-based management system." LifeTouch, with about 10 million customers, creates growth opportunities for Shutterfly's online photo book and photo organization system. LifeTouch essentially had to put itself up for sale in recent months. It wasn't growing fast enough to generate sufficient cash flow to invest in new technology and otherwise in the business, as well as cashing out some of its 16,000 employee and former employee owners as they reach retirement age and are eligible to sell their stock back to the company. The LifeTouch CEO, Michael Meek, said that the company needed to move beyond paper and develop a better digital platform. He said, "We've done some on our own. This will accelerate that vision and let us provide a world-class portfolio of products."
It's interesting to me that the school pictures, having two boys school age and having to go through this every year, the school pictures are still a big deal. Like, it's still...
Are they still as big of a deal?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
When you think about, you know, the number... I guess at that age, depending on the age, I mean, I imagine when you get, like, into high school and kids already have phones, it's not as big a deal. But in the younger ages, like, in our household, it's still, like, getting the... Oh, it's class photo day. It's still such a big deal. And then a world where we all have just really nice, better cameras than the ones that the people are shooting our children on.
Right.
It's still, like, a big deal to get them behind some nice background and wearing nice clothes and, you know... It's just interesting to me. That's still a thing.
At least in my experience, like with every passing year and every advanced grade, it becomes less and less of a big deal.
Yeah.
Until you get to the senior pictures, and then you have to shell out a bunch of money for those.
I don't know how LifeTouch isn't making more money though for how much they charge. Yeah, for their school photo packages.
Maybe to what Drew just said, that's why they were not making a lot of money, and they were, you know, probably happy that Shutterfly bought them. Shutterfly, by the way, dude, those guys got it. There's a whole like racket going on in our family with Shutterfly. They have a whole system in place. They just keep buying stuff. It's incredible to me.
I honestly don't even know what
Shutterfly is. You can put together these scrapbooks and books based off of photos.
Okay. It's like a website where you can just like, they can make you books and stuff with your photos.
So Melinda's Dunham of Logan's DC trip, their trip to the Harry Potter world in Florida, and you can put together these books and stuff like that. But then they offer in these specials, and my wife's really good about looking to make sure they're getting a deal. And then they get these specials, you can get more. And so my wife and my stepmom, and they just Shutterfly, and every couple of weeks something new from Shutterfly pops up, and there's a reusable bag. It's got my face on it, and I don't know why. it's so strange.
Ooh, I'm gonna get a bag with my face on it.
Yeah, what showed up the other day? Like, why is there? Why is my face on a reusable bag?
I'm going to Shutterfly right now.
Same.
Buying me a bag.
Nice with job. John's face on it.
Nice job, Sam.
Thanks. Excellent top five, as always.
Thank you.
Hey, just real quick, out of the Star Tribune, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but apparently there's been a number of Justin Timberlake sightings
around
the Twin Cities.
Yeah, this is the Twin Cities version of Where's Waldo.
He came early, apparently, and has been dining.
Yeah. Every news outlet I went to was like, hey, we got a Justin Timberlake sighting. Like, we saw Justin Timberlake.
You're not cool unless you've seen Timberlake out in the wild. It's so ridiculous, too, where they talk about his first stop was Manny's Steakhouse. The singer was looking ultra casual in a dark stocking cap and sweatshirt.
What did you expect?
He's going to come in wearing a suit, sweatpants.
Or a tuxedo. Yeah. Just walking around the Twin Cities in a tuxedo all the time. Yeah, what did you expect? He's just going out to dinner. Leave the guy alone.
We saw Justin Timberlake. He was wearing a mess crop shirt and dolphin shorts. It was so odd.
You got to get a prize if you see him a number of times. It's like bird watching. What are you doing? I'm going out Timberlake sighting.
Oh, I bet there are people that are right now. I can only imagine.
But and as the as the week goes on and gets closer to the weekend, it's good. More and more celebrities are going to be coming. Expect a lot of this fawning over a celebrity sighting in downtown or whatever. It's going to be ridiculous.
We will we'll talk more about this this next story here with David Gartenstein-Ross. He joins us just after 7:30. But out of Fox News, a couple of points from it. Fox News has confirmed that two FBI officials have reviewed the Republican FISA memo alleging the surveillance abuses during the presidential campaign, and they could not find any factual inaccuracies. Now, this is according to the chief intelligence correspondent Catherine Herridge. The FBI offered no comment to Fox News regarding Bureau officials' review of the documents. Senior DOJ officials told Fox after the story was first posted, however, that they dispute the characterization that no inaccuracies could be cited. So, kind of, at least in looking at it, the takeaway seems to be what potentially these FBI officials saw in the memo was accurate. I think the question is, are those accurate potential facts damaging? That's, you know, that's where this seems to come down with the characterization. Because you read it and you go, well, they couldn't cite any factual inaccuracies. It is totally true. Well, okay, just because it's totally true doesn't mean that it's the smoking gun.
But if you couple that with the reaction from the people that have already read the memo, then you start to think, okay, there's some pretty heavy stuff in here.
Yeah.
The veracity, or not the veracity, but the vociferousness that the Democrats are pushing back against this memo, starting to put their own memos together to counter it, saying that releasing it is a horrible idea. I mean, it all looks like there's some damning information in this memo that's going to make a lot of people look bad.
And one of the things we'll ask David, because we've had conversations with David Gartenstein-Ross about this in the past, is the potential dangers of getting this information out there. Like, does the exposure of the potential abuses outweigh the dangers of the good work that could maybe be done via FISA warrants? And I'm not saying that's what I believe. I'm just saying that's one of the things that we'll ask to be, because he's been pretty pointed when it comes to being careful about putting classified information out into the public ether and the damage it can do to the individuals who are trying to gather that information.
We will recap last night's State of the Union. We'll talk to Tim Huebskamp from the Heartland Institute at 7:20, David at 7:35. But we also want to get your reaction. Did you watch the speech? What did you think of the speech? Were you pleased with it? 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
Out of the Daily Caller, President Trump placed the emphasis on we over I. Okay, he used, not that it matters, but just because we get this a lot, especially when Obama was in office, he used I 150 times. Trump used the word I 29 times in the speech while using we 129 times. Mm. Well, he used our 104 times. America.
I want that job. All right, you
count.
You count the wheeze.
I bet somebody got paid pretty well to count the wheeze.
Stan over there is going to count the eyes. Yeah. You count the
wheeze. One,
two.
Louis Gutierrez, the congressman from Illinois, appeared to be triggered during Trump's, what they say here in the article, soaring rhetoric. Trump praised the Capitol building, calling it a monument to the American people. The applause broke out, and so did chants of USA, USA, USA. It was at that moment that Gutierrez went and left his seat as several Democrats patted him on the arm as he retreated to a safe space. Oh. Yeah, it was really funny to see him kind of get up in a huff, and everyone's like, it's okay, Louis. It's okay. It's like, you do know you live in America, right? Chanting USA, USA, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
More from last night's State of the Union, plus your calls coming up next right here on Twin Cities News Talk. Justice in